Welcome to Stat 209B, Winter Quarter 2022. I am David Ragosa, the instructor and creator of this course and the original Stat 209. What we want to do here in this week zero construct is give you some of the organizing details of the course in these changing and difficult times, and also a quick overview of the course content, the kinds of things we discuss at the beginning of the first week of the quarter class. And so I'll do that here, may help in preparing you for the course and in making your course selections. So just on logistics, this audio file, which you obviously have found, is linked on the main course webpage, and that's hosted on GoDaddy. RagosaTeaching.com is where everything exists. The lecture slides are also linked. That's file 22.lect0.pdf, and there's 14 slides there. And the idea and the structure of lectures for this course, and so this is a small example, are to view the slides and listen to the audio, and that's an imitation of what you'd see in Sequoia 200, where I come with a stack of PDF slides and I tell you about them. I also write on the board and interact, and some of those things we won't have the ability to do this year. Last year we did this remote asynchronous, so we're fairly prepared. This year, what we're calling flipped instruction was all the rage at the university before the New World Order, is lectures will be updated versions of what we did last year under remote asynchronous, and the scheduled Wednesday class section will be for discussion, student questions, student discussion of their own research interests. So a combination of discussion section and office hours is what we'll use the Wednesday section for. And we'll see what things are like in January. Various universities, especially in the Midwest, were already shutting down as I dictate this on December 4th. And so we'll have to see what January is like. But the idea is the first in-class session will be the second week of the quarter, January 12th. And I have that in bold on the class webpage. So you found the class webpage and you found the PDF slides and the audio, and so we're doing good. Hopefully everybody has made that level of success. In normal times, what we would have done and what was envisioned in the spring when I constructed this course for this upcoming year was I would come in and do 2 hours of lecture each week in Sequoia 200. What we'll have with the lecture slides and companion audio each week, and you can see that from last year's lectures, which will be updated for this year, is that I'm showing you the slides that I would have shown you live in Sequoia 200, and the audio is pretty much what I would say in guiding you through the slides, and all the background resources and the examples and the exercises are all online as they always are and have been for 25 years when I've been doing courses online. So we're doing a reasonable imitation of that. Advantages are you can consume these at your own rate. You don't have to do 2 hours, 110 minutes straight. That gets pretty much past saturation for many people. So you get to pick at them as you like, or you can binge. Each one will be up at the beginning of the appropriate week. So let's just walk through page one of the PDF, which is just a marked up version of the main web page, which you've obviously found. So TA for the course is David Fager, who is also a TA for the fall quarter course, so that provides us with wonderful continuity. More on that later. We have the course webpage. We have going down, we have our lecture slides and audio companion. Those will be linked on the main lectures page week by week. We have music, if you like it, before and after lecture that I play for my own amusement. We have the registrar's information, which we'll come to unit course. Prerequisite, this course is designed to be accessible from various entry point. So the suggested prerequisites are stated somewhat vaguely. Certainly a number of the topics we take up were introduced in the fall quarter stat 209 by Dominic, and so there is good continuity and some overlap between the courses. But this course also provides access if you've had some other introduction to some of the issues in observational studies and causal inference, or if you just have a reasonably strong background in applied statistics, you can easily catch on to many of the things we're talking about. Last year's course materials are available. Click through if you want to see the full set of lectures. And as I say, we'll update those. We're doing it in flip mode, and we'll post each week the new versions of the lectures. The Wednesday class meeting we discussed, and we'll see how that works out and what meets students' needs the most. It's like everything else, nothing's required, but we try to be helpful, and each student can choose what level of effort they want to put in, depending on their background and their other constraints. And importantly, we won't try to do any in-class meeting the first week. Who knows what life will be like then, and people will be moving around and traveling. So we'll regroup or group for the first time on January 12th and see where we are and what suits students the best. So I have a brief course outline here, which I won't spend much time on content today. That'll be there, but you can see we have a logic to the course. The first part, for at least 3 weeks, is extensions of randomized controlled trials. That is the basic two-group comparison, whether it be pre-post or not. That's unit four, is extended in various ways. And some of these illustrate the idea that it's not a black and white difference between a randomized controlled trial and an observational study. Sometimes you ask questions that are harder than the randomized controlled trial is designed to answer, and it gets you more into the realm of observational studies. Sometimes the randomized controlled trial just doesn't work out so well, and then you're in the realm of observational or non-randomized assignment. So we have encouragement designs, which is an important new kind of design, especially for behavioral medicine and a lot of psychological situations. Mediation, which is the harder why question. Moderation, which is heterogeneous treatment effects, i.e. individual differences in response to an intervention. Compliance adjustments, attempt to recover from breakdowns in the protocol. And regression discontinuity, which is an extension of random assignment to systematic assignment. And those four are all grouped, those five topics are all grouped as extension of randomized controlled trials, and brings up some of the major issues that we're dealing with. Unit two is legacy methods from observational data. Some work, some are things to run away from. We have analysis covariance, which is the primary way people do things. Whether they call it analysis covariance or not, we'll spend some time showing you the awfulness of all that. Instrumental variables, which have their place, and Professor Imbens won a Nobel Prize for one very clever use of them. In observational studies, it's very different than when you use them as part of random assignment. Path analysis, which is multiple regression with pictures, and structural equation models, which are multiple regression with pictures with variables you don't see, are important issues to take up. And Judea Pearl's always confusing these with models for the processes that generalize the data, that is response schedules. and we'll talk about that. Associations, going back to correlation and causation, we'll see some examples just picking up in some things like Simpson's paradox, which was also brought up in the fall quarter. Multi-level data, finding cause and effect when there's a nested structure to the data, and contextual effects, the effect of groups on individuals are all important topics here, and reciprocal causal effects, which is a real hard topic. Does X cause Y or does Y cause X? Self-esteem and achievement, drug use and depression, all sorts of things like that, or the famous TV violence and aggression. So we'll take up those. And that's our observational data section. Then unit 3 is matching methods, and we have additional topics capabilities that we used to do, we did up to through last year in the spring quarter course, which is STAT 266, EPI 292, and we'll have links to there, but we'll start out and do some of the classic examples and then go on to rather advanced topics, and you can consume at the level of your own background. We'll have lots of resources available under basic idea of uses of propensity scores, and that can be used in many different ways, but it's good to understand the history and the logic, and then the advanced methods we're using today. We'll have lots of computational examples and all these things. And then unit 4 is time 1, time 2 data, and we have both experimental and observational study examples and designs, crossover designs, which is the ultimate potential outcomes example, comparing groups pre-post designs and using mixed effects models, i.e. LMER, to analyze those, whether they be two-wave or multi-wave, is an important thing to get down. Economists' differences and differences, which is an attempt to do pre-post designs when you don't have random assignment. Lurie's paradox, which is pre-post group comparisons. Correlates of change and exogenous variables, an important topic. Lag-dependent variables that we'll take up the good and bad of. And interrupted time series, value-added analysis, and all sorts of other topics can come up. We have a little bit of time for those. Boxed on page 1 is lectures, course files, and readings. And that's where all the real content exists. You'll see the week 0 readings in a moment. For those of you who want to do some background reading, that's the secondary page and the main page. This is the logistics page, our front page. We have it for 2 units, and it's either letter or credit, no credit, satisfactory, no credit, whatever they're calling it this year. It's changed a lot. Pass-fail is no longer used, but that's what it is. And the 2 units will have one take-home problem set, which I'll post in pieces. Usually what I've done in these courses is week 6 or 7 or so, I'll post a chunk of it, and then toward later in the quarter, I'll post the rest of it to give you a couple weeks. It's not going to take you a couple weeks. Give you a couple weeks to work on this so you can juggle all the other things we're doing. We don't know what end of quarter will be look like in March, but we'll work it out. And exams can either be transmitted electronically, or if we're still meeting in person, a hard copy, which is even better. We also each week have review questions with solutions. I don't believe in grading homework. I believe in giving additional examples where you can look at the solutions. And those are good fodder for the in-class discussion session. And then we'll have the course problem set, which will be linked here when we get to it. Statistical computing is an R. I don't probably need to say a whole lot about it. 412 was recently released. Last year it was 402, I believe, that I ran. I usually run the most current version clean to imitate what students are doing, so I don't have a whole lot of fancy things loaded that might be confusing. UCLA and Berkeley are, I don't believe, are any more functional, so you can download from wherever you like. I should mention CRAN task views, which are wonderful things. There's CRAN task view for everything, but social science, econometrics, and psychometric models and methods get at a lot of the observational studies and experimental design studies. There's also one on experimental design, which you could use. The relevant texts, 2 wonderful texts, is Imbens and Rubin. Of course, Imbens is our most recent Nobel Prize winner. Don Rubin, I took my first statistics course from back at Princeton, and that's a wonderful text, and that was used some in the fall quarter. And then Paul Rosenbaum, who was Rubin's student, Rubin and Rosenbaum, did the original about 30 years ago, big examples like coronary bypass in the early 80s, propensity score analyses under stratification matching. And so those, and Rosenbaum has, this is the mid-level Rosenbaum book, which was the text for the spring quarter medical school course, Stat 266, Epi 292, that I did for about 5 or 6 years, ended it last spring, and those materials still exist. And so I have Stanford links, which should still work for both of those if you want to grab those texts. And we'll draw from them on occasion in the lecture. There's also additional links, the Legacy Stat 209, which is what I did one quarter in the winters from about 15, 16 years ago, using David Freeman's book as a starting point. And that's linked in case you wanted to see some materials from that. And also Stat 266, Epi 292 for advanced matching methods and other advanced content that we'll bring in via links as we go on, especially in Unit 3. And so that completes our tour in 15 minutes of the first page of I guarantee you I will not spend 15 minutes on every page. In fact, we'll move quickly, but that's kind of the course overview and logistics. And of course, I'm happy to take questions on anything I may have skipped over or not said clearly enough. There is some uncertainty under which conditions will be pertaining in January or in March, and we'll deal with them as we come, and I'll make obvious announcements on the webpage. So page 2 of the PDF, finally moving, okay, very quickly. There's my attempt at student engagement right now. There's me standing next to Bradley Efron, far more important, at one of our many Efron celebrations that the Statistics Department has had over the last decades. There I am dressed rather formally compared to how I usually show up in class. I'm not wearing sunglasses, for example. And so there I am. So you can see you're not missing much by me not being there in person for 2 hours every week lecturing. Next page is a better picture, David Fager. He is the TA. His email is given on the front page, and we're both here to help you approach the course and conduct the course. And I see these courses as doing both backfill of things you've learned in applied statistics and can use some more practice on, and new concepts in observational data and experimental design. So that's our instructional crew, old and young, and we'll do our best to help anyone who comes our way. The fourth page of the PDF file is the beginning of the lecture's course files page. And so I put that up with some week zero links, and the rest of the content here for today is about these. I put up a couple of kind of canonical or classic readings that illustrate things we'll be doing, or just provide you some background if you haven't seen these things before. And I'll just say a few words about them because I'm 18 minutes in on this. We have three readings. The first one I'm going to take up is my favorite scatterplot example, and that's Nobel Prizes and chocolate consumption. That's item 2 here, and we have a news article and the publication from the New England Journal of Medicine engaging in a rare bit of sarcasm. Item 1 is Stephen Stigler, a friend of this department and a great historian of statistics, a great figure in statistics, and it's a couple of examples that I'll say a few words about. And then item 3 is David Freeman. One of these chapters, say association causation or statistical models for causation, represent a very good grounding in how statisticians look at experiments and observational studies. And I'd really encourage anyone in statistics to at least read one of these chapters. And so the next slides going forward are just pieces of these examples. And then week 1, we'll see our lecture and audio companion posted, plus all sorts of background resources and the content for the week. So this is where everything will be. So on to chocolate and Nobel laureates, and I just have little pieces of these just to maybe encourage you to take a look. Flavonoids are good for you. I eat dark chocolate, Lindt 92s, which is what Messerli eats in there. And so there's an idea that that improves cognitive function, also improves muscle development. There's lots of studies on that. And so correlation at the country level, and we'll look at levels of analysis in week 6 and its population cognitive function measured by, there's lots of measurements, total number of Nobel laureates per capita. And what you see is in the scatter plot, you get a very strong correlation between chocolate consumption and Nobel Prizes. If you look at PDF page 6, we see the wonderful scatter plot with Sweden as an outlier. Correlation would be closer to 0.9 without Sweden. So Sweden gets a boost just by being home team. And you can see a very strong correlation. And of course, correlation and causation is the starting point for all these kinds of discussions. This is just a wonderful example. X causes Y or Y causes X. We don't know from correlation. It could be just that smarter people, i.e. Nobel laureates, are having lots of Nobel laureates around, causes you to understand you should eat more chocolate. That's the way I think about it. But chocolate consumption could have a positive influence. You don't know, but the example is fun. And there's lots of, so there is some bench science, which is more than we have in most social science examples, about the effect of flavanols. But this scatter plot is wonderful. And the idea of correlation and causation is one that we bring up. How do we say more or say better about this relationship? And so country averages, PDF page 7 is just the end. Plausible common denominator, that is a spurious correlation, and we'll take it up in week 6, could possibly drive both chocolate consumption and Nobel laureates. So you could have X cause Y, Y cause X, or a common cause Z influencing both. And of course, those are kind of some of the basic questions everybody takes up in an observational studies course. Okay, PDF page 8, and you can see we have navigation, is Steve Stigler's little chapter, another great little read, and he takes up two topics, both of which have value, correlation and causation, going back to Galton, Granger, and brain size and examples. And so those are great historical examples. And the second example he takes up is a more technical one, which I usually have a lot to say about, especially in legacy course. We go through the effect of measurement error, but it's a little narrative showing you how, and I have detailed artificial data examples illustrating this, how you could start out by doing bad measurement, in this case, level of education, and create employment discrimination when there is none. That is, under perfect measurement, salary is directly related to education. Under fallible measurement, using analysis covariance adjustments for education, you create a large bias against minorities. And that's a great artifact to understand. There, you can work it out technically. In fact, I do. But he introduces a little narrative story, which you can expand upon, showing you how bad measurement and the use of regression adjustments. When will we stop doing that? It is the predominant way people do things, an important thing just to show you how very, very bad that is. But it is the way of the world. So regression adjustments, analysis covariance, whether you call it that or not, creating an artifact of employment discrimination. That's the second one. And then David Freeman's chapters, the Yule example, showing we've been doing this for over 100 years. So last century, 19th century, we were doing this for the effect of welfare payments on poverty. And on PDF page 11, you'll see from Freeman's article that Yule found that welfare outside the poor horse created more paupers, i.e. welfare payments were counterproductive, and all these things rely on confounding. And there's additional examples talked about in Friedman's discussion, and some good statistical content. So that's Friedman's first example, an association to causation. And then PDF page 12 has some more general comments, formal models of causation, regression models, how people rely on models rather than bench science or science, which is unfortunate. And PDF page and asbestos and drinking water, which is a local example. Milpitas is a bad example, and confounding variable smoking. So that's a good read, PDF page 12 or Friedman's chapter. And then PDF page 13 is from Statistical Models for Causation and Hooke's Law. And Hooke's Law is a great thing to point out. One, it shows you why you never should standardize coefficients, and we do that exercise in the old Stat 209. But also, it's a wonderful representation of potential outcomes. Hooke's Law is the one point of commonality between Judea Pearl and David Friedman and other potential outcomes enthusiasts or adopters, because it provides the idea of, if we had this kind of law in social science or even in life sciences, we then could use regression adjustments to make as-if-by-experiment conclusions. And that's one of David Friedman's important phrases, trying to make as-if-by-experiment conclusions off of from observational data, where we still learn much of what we learn from observational data. We just have to be careful about it. So Hooke's Law, which tells you how long a spring elongates when you change the weight. So it's the effect of causes. The cause is the weight, and if 5 grams versus 10 grams is going to produce a different spring length. So it's dose response. Linear dose response of the simplest case, as we see from PDF page 13. And I think that's a good thing to keep in mind as we talk about observational studies. And page 14 in the last page of the PDF, I just have a simple description of Hooke's Law for those of you who didn't take high school physics or some other introduction. And you can see it because it is a very, very good model to keep in mind. As I say, the point of commonality between Pearl and potential outcomes people. And that's important to find those where we can, because the language and sometimes the point of view can differ. So that completes our week zero, which was mainly to give you a quick tour of the course logistics, and also a little bit of content, or encourage you to take a look at some things. Of course, it's all up to you, but provide resources is my idea of instruction. Provide resources, provide guidance for the resources, and you consume what you see. So hopefully this gave you at least an idea of how we do this course with audio and lecture. And this is pushing on 30 minutes. Oh, well. And we'll also give you an idea of the course content, which will be detailed technical treatment of methods and research settings, and also lots of examples from actual research. And you can see that from thumbing through last year's, or scrolling through, I guess is a technique would be more appropriate, online, scrolling through the examples we see last year, both from behavioral science and life sciences. So this is a course about methods and application of methods. And we do a lot of computing and data analysis also. So what we have here is a continuation of fall quarters topics, both extending the technical basis and doing additional examples, or an alternative introduction to these topics if you came from a different introduction. Thank you very much. End of week zero, December 4th, 2021.